Coming up in this episode.
There's nothing I love better than a warehouse visit, and that's because I think logistics is the engine of the economy. Everything about a business is nothing if you haven't got the logistics to back it up.
The Logistics Collective podcast is a series focused on the logistics industry, where there are many incredible stories to be told. We'll be speaking with those who've worked and are working within the industry today. What have been their experiences, good and bad, since joining, and would they recommend a career in the industry to others? Here's your host, Malcolm Pope.
Hello and welcome to Logistics Collective, the podcast. This is our second edition, and I have somebody... Well, I would describe as a logistics celebrity, but she will probably blush terribly and be embarrassed, and I still believe that to be the case. I have Claire Bottle, who is the chief executive of the UK Warehousing Association, known by me by UQWA, who is also vice chair of the really important organisation, which is Women in Logistics. Has had an incredible career, very diverse career, and I don't want to embarrass with some of the names of the past, so we'll just mention a few. You've worked for Coca-Cola, Solvay, Cemex, Eon, you've worked for the NAFI as well. You've done absolutely all sorts, and I think it's, you know, fantastic with somebody with so much industry experience is now leading one of the absolutely key professional and industry bodies within here. So welcome, Claire. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you. And thank you very much for having me.
You're most welcome. So I'm going to give you an interesting question, which is, if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Just one?
Just one. You're only allowed one. I'm sorry. I'm being mean. I'm the mean genie today.
Okay. Well, if it was one superpower, then I think what I would go for is I'd like to have the superpower to go viral. I'm a big fan of LinkedIn, and people may see me on there quite frequently, but I've never actually cracked it. And, you know, it's probably a superpower for our ages. That's the one I'd like.
Okay, so you're viral multimedia woman. Yes.
Yeah, I've never even made a TikTok, but I guess that's the way you do it.
Okay. So could you tell us a little bit more about what you do?
Yeah, sure. So the UK Warehousing Association is a trade association. I joined last July and I'm the chief executive, which means whatever happens, I'm the sort of orchestrator of it. I've been doing a bit of restructuring, and we've got a good team. We are a kind of membership organisation for companies, not for individuals. So we've got about 900 members. The majority of those are 3PLs, so third-party logistics companies that operate their own warehousing. We also have what we call logistics users, or what you might know as own account, sure, who are warehouse operators that store their own goods that they own. And then we also have our associate members. So those will be the companies that sell some kind of goods or services to warehouse operators. So they might sell forklift trucks or warehouse management systems, or more recently, solar panels, anything like that.
Fantastic. So what does working in the logistics and supply chain industry mean to you?
It's everything. It's my life. You know, there's nothing I love better than a warehouse visit. And that's because I think logistics is the engine of the economy. And because everything about a business is nothing if you haven't got the logistics to back it up. I think, you know, in military circles, they sometimes say you can get too hung up on strategy. Logistics is what really makes it happen.
Certainly, and that's where it stems from. It was originally a military discipline. It was a key factor in whether or not wars were won. And clearly at the moment, sadly, we're living through it, aren't we? So you always have a busy week. I mean, you're talking about becoming, you know, your superpower of being viral. But I do watch, and I do look at a whole series of industry professionals. And wow, are you busy. And, you know, I know you've just come from a John Lewis warehouse this morning. And
yeah, that's right. So I was at the Northamptonshire Logistics Forum, which is kind of coordinated by University of Northampton, but it's got loads of representation from all sorts of different companies across Northamptonshire, which is the heartland of warehousing. Tony Bellett, who used to work for John Lewis, is the chair of that organisation, and they have some really good meetings. It's been lovely getting back to a face-to-face approach.
Fantastic. And it is wonderful to begin to meet people again, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, we're finding that with our events. I mean, for example, the UK Warehousing Association has historically always held our awards at the Dorchester Hotel, which is a lovely, prestigious venue. But it's actually closed in 2022. So we've had to relocate to the Royal Lancaster Hotel. And I felt a little bit anxious about that because it's a bigger venue. I thought, well, you know, are we going to fill it? Well, I'll tell you what, people want to get back to face to face. The tickets are selling like hotcakes.
Fantastic to hear. And by all means, when we publish this, let's get some details out. So let's make sure it's full for you. I mean, I think that's really important. Why are you so passionate? And clearly you are passionate about your role at UQWA.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Malcolm. When I was first approached about this opportunity, you know, that there was going to be a vacancy, my predecessor, Peter Ward, was a guy who I hugely respected. But when he decided it was time to retire, it was the last thing on my mind. I definitely wasn't expecting to get approached about this job. And the recruiter who initially spoke to me, I said, oh, let me think if I can think of some good people to recommend. And he said, no, it's you that I want to talk to, you, which really took me by surprise. And initially I said, no, I'm not interested. It wouldn't be right for me. But it took a bit of sort of self-reflection for me to realise actually that could be such an exciting opportunity. I suppose that stems from the fact of what we were talking about before, that I've got such a passionate belief in how important logistics is. And, you know, logistics is sometimes like the hidden part of the economy.
For sure.
But warehousing is the hidden part of logistics. So it's almost like I'm backing the underdog. We're the poor cousin, or whatever terminology you want to use. And I just thought that there's, you know, we're overlooked, warehousing, as though it's just pretty simple. You just store stuff in a warehouse. How complicated can that be? But in fact, there's so much going on. You know, there's a lot of job opportunities in warehousing, which are not well recognised, and there's a lot that you can do in warehousing to improve the efficiency of supply chains. So I suppose that's what makes me so passionate about it.
It's fantastic. I mean, I think, you know, warehousing is a key. It's a key and fundamental part of all of logistics and supply chain. You know, you have to have them. It's a key part in terms of the modern view of in terms of e-fulfillment. But it supports everything. And, you know, logistics and supply chain is a multi-trillion-pound global industry. And you know, I've always felt it's fantastic to be a part of what helps deliver everything we need for everyday life. I mean, literally everything. I share your passion and enthusiasm for the industry, but I'm perhaps a little quieter, but then I'm more than a bit older, so fair enough. What's been your best career experience so far? What really sort of has lit the fires of and said, okay, this has really fired me up, and this has been incredible.
I am by nature an optimist, so I have to answer that question by saying it's yet to come. You know, the best is yet to come.
Fantastic.
I've absolutely enjoyed every moment so far, but even though this role wasn't something I initially saw myself doing, now that I'm chief exec of the UK Warehousing Association, I've got such a vision, you know, such grand plans for what we can do with our organisation, and it's only going to get better.
Okay. And if I've spoken about the yin, I have to speak about the yang as well. What perhaps has been the worst experience of your career? What did you learn from it?
So I would say there are a couple of things that have been depressing. And back in the day when I first sort of started out, I used to say to people, the only thing that keeps me awake at night is safety. So, you know, during the course of my career, you mentioned a moment ago, you're a bit older than me, but we've both been around a long time. I think we've seen over the past sort of 20, 30 years, huge improvements in the status of health and safety as being, you know, a really important part of how you run a logistics operation. And the idea that people might get hurt at work is something I find completely intolerable. And that might be because early in my career, I particularly did some work in the chemicals industry and in the construction industry. And those are two industries which have done a lot to improve on safety. So one of the times I've felt out of sorts, if you like, is working for a company who I won't name, who thought that safety wasn't all that important. And it's not so much that I thought they were operating dangerously. It's more that it just wasn't my kind of thing. I prefer to work somewhere where safety is very highly valued, because that's the type of, you know, that's the way I came up in our industry. And then my second sort of low point, that was more of a learning experience for me a bit more recently in my career, because as I say, I always used to say it's only ever safety that keeps me awake at night. And then I had to close the site and make people redundant.
Yeah.
And that kept me awake at night in a way that I hadn't really anticipated it would, because, in a way, there's a bit of a parallel in the sense that you're having a lasting impact on people's lives, which happens if you don't pay attention to their safety, but also happens if you're making people redundant. Closing the warehouse and making everybody who worked there redundant, some of them after 20 plus years of working in that facility, that was quite a painful thing to go through and very educational. And if I can be dispassionate about it, it was professionally very interesting, but from a personal point of view, I found it tough.
And it always is tough, and I think you're doing things right for the forward health of the business, but you can still keep people at the core of that. Sadly, jobs do come to an end sometimes, and it's the effort that we put into, well, both not just compensate but also to counsel, advise, and try and place, because doubtless, you know, you've got a pool of talent that will find new places to work. And, you know, the upside of that is that, well, perhaps they'll do that with a few pounds in the back pocket that they didn't expect to get. So, but it's the change, it's the shock of change. I certainly put a connection into any business that is passionate about people will be passionate about health and safety, because that's what is at the core of it. And if they're not so passionate about people, then, well, I'll let people draw their own conclusions.
But, yeah, no, I agree with you entirely.
When did you first become interested in logistics and supply chain? And I know this goes back a little way, I shall say.
Yeah, absolutely. So I studied the history of art as an undergraduate at university. So that doesn't immediately lead one into a career in logistics. But whilst I was at university, I got pregnant by mistake and had my son, who's now in his late 20s. You know, that it's all panned out well, but it did mean that when I first graduated, I was looking for a job that would be compatible with childcare as a single parent, you know. And this was a long time ago. And the way that you applied for jobs was you would read through the Smalls ads in the paper, and then you would type out some sort of application letter and send it in the post. It all sounds incredibly old fashioned now, but that was the way things were done.
Oh, I know.
I went to university in Manchester, and I was living still in Manchester. So it was the Manchester Evening News. I remember quite distinctly that I applied for 42 jobs. And the first person that offered me a job was BRS, and that's the job I took. So BRS was British Road Services, another of the brands that doesn't exist these days, but they gave me my first chance. And I worked for them as a secretary, because that was in the days when the men did the proper work and the women typed it up. So
shock
what I discovered is if you're typing stuff and you ask the managers you're typing for to tell you a bit about, you know, why they said what they said, they're surprisingly interested in talking to you about it. So I typed up disciplinary hearings and contracts, and, you know, contracts of employment or commercial contracts with customers. I typed up loads of correspondence. I even typed up the engineering manager's dissertation for his master's. And through all of that typing work, I actually learned much more than I'd expected. And within a couple of years, my son was old enough that I could apply as an internal candidate to get onto their graduate training programme. And BRS was part of the NFC at the time, the National Freight Consortium. And against the odds, they agreed and they took me on. And I have never looked back from the very first moment on that graduate training programme, working as a night shift supervisor in a tinned fish warehouse in Widnes. I was absolutely hooked.
It's interesting. We're doing sort of this number of degrees of separation. So The first thing I would say is that the first logistics company I contracted anything out to was for a paper mill, and that was to BRS.
Right.
And then ultimately when I worked with Heinz, I can say that, and they took over John West, I guess I had a part in doing a little bit of management with Excel up in Widnes as well. So there you go.
Small world.
It is a small world, isn't it? It's interesting. Who's inspired you the most in your career, and why did they inspire you?
Oh, gosh, loads of people have inspired me. Very early days, I had an amazing boss called Frank Taylor. Yeah. Frank worked for Excel in Trafford Park. And the thing I found really inspirational about him was how much he believed in me, when really there wasn't much to justify that. I was still very new and inexperienced. But the fact that he was willing me to succeed made me raise my game. That's something I've tried to capture myself with when I've had people working for me. So Frank was really, pivotal. But there are lots of people across our industry who equally are inspiring that I maybe haven't worked directly for. So, of course, I would have to mention Beverly Bell and Ruth Waring, both of whom are, almost institutions in our sector. So Beverly Bell was the first female traffic commissioner. I saw her just this week, actually, at the Microlise dinner. Sure. She's still an absolute icon of what women can achieve in her case, it was a sort of intersect between the legal sector and the logistics sector, where she's absolutely shone. And she's not the sort of queen bee syndrome of women who want to succeed on their own merits and draw the bridge up after them. Quite the opposite. Beverly's always been very supportive of the principle of having more women in logistics, and was one of the first people to vocally support the organisation Women in Logistics, which was, of course, set up by Ruth Waring, the other lady I mentioned. Ruth and I have been friends for probably going on for 20 years now. And she had that sort of visionary idea of creating a networking group, a bit of solidarity. And since the inception of Women in Logistics UK, we've seen the proportion of women in the sector start to improve. Although, having said that, it's still rather slow.
My observation of the logistics industry is about slow pace of change. And I do think it needs to pick up the pace, because the world is changing and there are new challenges out there. And for me, I think the industry has benefited hugely from the slow increase of women working within that. I've always valued every single woman that I've worked with within logistics. And they've added, how can I describe it? A more broad, mature dimension to projects, to management, to the whole lot. And for me, if you're asking me, would I like to see more? Yes, I'd like to see more of everybody, but I'd certainly want to see the industry being diverse as it possibly can.
Yeah, and one of the developments within Women in Logistics UK is that about 3 or 4 years ago, we became a forum within the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport. And from their point of view, CILT's point of view, they wanted to do that because our events programme had developed quite a cachet and, a good sure. reputation, and CILT wanted a part of that, which makes sense. But from our point of view, or certainly from my personal point of view, one of the things that I thought we could achieve better within CILT than we could on our own was to collaborate with respect to different types of protected characteristics.
Sure.
So, for example, within CILT, there's now a Pride Forum. There's a lady called Anne Fry who runs the Accessibility and Inclusion Forum, which looks at, the issues around disability at work. Although at the moment race and ethnicity is not well represented within CILT, there are people talking about how we could do more on that front as well. Back in 2008, I think it made sense to have an organisation set up specifically to support women.
Sure.
But the new intersectionality of how we think about diversity means that we do it better when we do it together.
I certainly agree. And this industry does some of the most difficult jobs. In industry, the logistics industry does all the hard stuff, I believe. And we need as much talent from as many and diverse, I'll use the word persuasions, and I don't want that to be misused, but we need everybody, you know, and I think we should be welcoming everybody, in my view. So what are you most proud of?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to mention something fairly trivial, but only because somebody was asking me about it yesterday. So there was a time where I worked for about 6 or 7 years as an interim manager. So I was kind of doing contract work and working for different businesses on a short-term basis. And I spent some time at Transport for London. Yeah. So that was the first time I'd ever worked in the public sector. That was an education in itself. And at the time, Transport for London had what they called the freight unit, which was fairly unusual. I think quite a lot of municipal authorities have some kind of transport infrastructure or organization. You know, there's certainly one in Manchester, and they're always quite focused on passenger transport. But at Transport for London, they were quite visionary, really. And there was a chap called Steve Steele who ran the freight unit, and I got the opportunity to work with them right at the very beginning of FORS, which it was the Fleet Operator Recognition Scheme. And I picked the logo. So FORS has gone on to be incredibly successful, they have a wonderful logo. I can't say I designed it. You know, Transport for London had some designers, and they created this design which looks a bit like a sort of tyre with the Thames running through it. And they showed me a range of different images, and I picked that one and said, yeah, I think we should have that as the FORS logo. And it still is the FORS logo, whatever it is, 15 years later, and it's on almost every truck you see, certainly in the southeast. So yeah, I'm pretty proud of that.
We did a little bit of work for a business within the construction sector, and we got to know FORS, so now I can actually put at least the choice of logo, and an arts graduate no less, that has successfully branded a really great initiative. What do you wish you would have known when you started your career?
Oh, this is a great question, and I've got a really clear answer for this.
Okay.
The thing that I would have loved to have known, say when I was like a kid at school, is how disorganized businesses are.
Sure.
So when I was little, I wanted to be a novelist. And then when I was a teenager, I wanted to be an architect, because I thought that I could create stuff and I would find that satisfying. But what I didn't really think about was a career in business, because my perception of businesses was that everything ran like clockwork and you would be a bit of a caretaker and there wouldn't be much creativity required. And that was so wrong.
Sure.
You know, to start with, most businesses are not well organized in the first place, but then the pace of change, whether that's change of strategy, or, you know, it might be a change because there's a pandemic, or a change because of Brexit, or you know, a tactical change because the Ever Given's crashed in the Suez Canal. All of these are changes in the environment that businesses have to respond to. And there's so much change going on all the time, a lot more scope for being creative working in business than I had ever imagined when I was little.
Fantastic. And these challenges are always interesting. Initially, they seem befuddling and, you know, what am I going to do about this? And then all of a sudden you get your creative mindset, your positive mindset, and say, well, okay, this offers some opportunities as well as some challenges within there. And what's a life without challenges? You know,
pointless. That's what it is.
Yeah, I agree. What surprised you most about the logistics and supply chain industry recently?
Recently, well, we're actually doing some research at the UK Warehousing Association about barriers to the adoption of solar PV. So this is solar photovoltaic panels that you can put onto a warehouse roof. I suppose the first thing that surprised me is that nobody knows how many warehouses have solar PV. And the second thing is those who are prepared to hazard a guess are telling me it's between 2% and 5%. And I find that shocking, because I know we're on a journey to achieve net zero by 2050. And that's just what the government is saying as a target. You know, investors, employees, customers are putting even more pressure on businesses to go even faster than that where they can. And installing solar panels on a warehouse seems like what I would call a no-brainer. And yet it's just not happening. So I find that really surprising. And that's why we've commissioned some research on it. So watch this space, because I think we'll have something interesting to say later this year about why that is and how we can fix it.
I remember in a previous employed role, basically our regional distribution center for Eastern Europe, based in Bulgaria. That had, for a very long time, for a whole number of years, so it will be over a decade now, has had solar panels, solar PV cells on it, on its roof. And obviously, it's a bit sunnier in Bulgaria during the summer, but, entirely sensible. And it's interesting looking at the industry about how much of a contribution it can make to the targets set by COP26.
Mm.
I've had my mind set on what can we do in terms of transport, and there's tons of things we can do in terms of transport. Summary on that, all of our systems, to my mind, are either not coordinated correctly or not fit for purpose, and we need to do something radical with them. But PV cells sitting on the top of a warehouse, when you're thinking about, well, the growth of automation within there and the fact that a lot of MHE is powered electrically, and even making a surplus in terms of that potentially on point, is a brilliant idea. And you're actually making use of things that can be. If we look at public perception of warehouses, are these grey or multicoloured boxes that are cluttering up, but at least you can look at them and say, well, it's better than looking at a nuclear power station. So, if it's effectively got all of these PV, these PV panels on the, on the top of it. So I think that's.
Yeah, I think if we could be seen as part of the solution, that might be a step towards changing our image problem.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think problem comes from two things, is that people perhaps, normal person on the street doesn't really understand everything that we do, and perhaps nor should they, but I think sometimes they get reminded when things are under pressure. It's very, very apparent what the industry does for people. But I think you're right. I think there are some additional things that we can do to more than pull our weight for a future in logistics and supply chain. What's fundamentally changed about your work from when you started?
Well, I'll tell you what's changed in terms of what I need to do on a day-to-day basis, because there's a whole new set of skills I've had to learn in the last few months that I was never exposed to before. And that's to do with the issues around public policy. And I think it does also sort of pertain to a bit of a change of, the winds of change are running through the way that government engages with supply chains. So if I can take you back to my most recent job before Sure. UKWA, I worked for Coca-Cola. I'm sure you can immediately understand why Coca-Cola never gave any public affairs responsibility to the person that looked after warehousing, because, they had absolute professional experts for that. But when I came to join the UK Warehousing Association, I suddenly discovered not only, that I was responsible for talking to government, but also that I quite enjoy it. it's really interesting to engage. And one of the first issues that I came across is, of course, when you think about the logistics sector, you can divvy it up, if you like, into transport and warehousing. And for transport, you've got a department for transport, ministers, a secretary of state. There's a select committee for transport. If you work in the transport part of a policy, you know who you've got to talk to.
Yeah.
Warehousing had nothing like that. And after having spoken to some people at the Cabinet Office, I'm really pleased to say that the newly named Department for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities has now been nominated as the lead department for warehousing, which is really encouraging. But working with civil servants, I've found to be, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, without meaning to be disparaging, I have nevertheless been quite surprised at how little they understand about logistics. And in a way, that's made me feel confident that I do definitely understand it better than I thought I did. But I'm also really heartened and encouraged by the fact that, having identified that I'd got this engagement question about, who am I supposed to be dealing with, they dealt with that. Having been nominated, the civil servants and officials from DLUHC have been really, put a lot of effort into trying to upskill themselves and trying to build the relationship. I feel as though potentially there is a bit of a change going on here, which is that government is starting to take more interest in the complexities of logistics and more broadly of how supply chains work, because ultimately that is an engine of the economy, as I've mentioned before, and governments ought to be interested in it, and I'm pleased that ours is.
Well, I always say I'm never inclined to punish anyone for a lack of knowledge, but I am more inclined to perhaps be critical of people that have a lack of curiosity. So, you know, the view there is that that willingness, that curiousness to learn, I think is really important. And there's a two-way learning that goes on there, isn't there?
For sure, yeah. I mean, my knowledge and understanding of how the civil service operates is almost zilch, but it's definitely improving by the day.
Okay. What do you think the biggest problem that you and your team have had to resolve in the last year?
Difficult to say, really. I mean, I suppose one of the strategic things that I'm interested in doing with the UK Warehousing Association is to sort of embrace a fairly new aspect of what role we can play, which is about being something like a think tank. Because there isn't really a think tank for warehousing. And if there was going to be one, I think we could be it. So that's a bit of a challenge because it's a slightly different way for us to perceive ourselves as an organisation. But I think it also, it comes with a big opportunity because when it does come to that sort of public affairs work that I was just talking about, we can speak with more credibility if we're backed up by some really thorough research. And equally, I think it also raises the standards of professionalism within warehousing if we can share some, you know, some well thought out ideas with our membership about what's going to happen next.
I think that's absolutely important. I mean, providing industry advice and industry intelligence is absolutely key. It informs better decision making, and for sure, the industry's grown in the UK. I absolutely agree that we need to have focus on research because the challenges that I think we're going to face over the next decades are going to be not in the sense of being unsolvable, but they are going to be tough. And I think we need our best minds and we need to get our coordinated best minds in terms of how can we continue to deliver what we do now, but also think about needs for the future. I'm always thrilled in terms of continuing and thinking about what is the future going to be like. You know, we need some futurists there that are doing that. And I know some of the larger logistics companies are focusing on that, with Wincanton with the W2 program, and I know that DHL have an innovation centre over in Germany. But I think we need to have, because I think logistics has got a home in the UK, and we should be having our own UK, whether it be logistics, supply chain, warehousing, whatever we're going to call it, innovation centre. And I think that's important. Now then, arts degree, secretary. Never underestimate anybody. Never, ever, ever. And then ultimately, a fantastic career for a whole variety of logistics companies solving, I don't doubt, numerous problems and challenges all the way through that. And now leading to leadership of one of the industry's most important trade bodies. I mean, that's a fantastic track record. And if you're not proud of yourself, I'm proud of you. So well done. So what I'd like to do in the last few minutes of the interview, I'd like to focus on giving advice to people considering a career in logistics. And you know, we can focus in on warehousing because you're quite entitled to do that. So do you think it's a good idea for people to consider the logistics and supply chain industry as one of their perhaps top three career choices? And if you do, why do you feel that to be the case?
Well, firstly, I would go further than your question implies, and I would say it's a terrible idea not to consider logistics and supply chain.
Fantastic.
So anybody who's kind of ruled it out ought to revisit that and have a think about why. And the reason I'm so keen for everybody to think about working in logistics and supply chain is, firstly, there are lots of opportunities. So something like 7% of all the working people in the whole of the UK work in logistics. So, you know, there's a lot going for us there. But also, if you look at all the managers and directors in logistics, and if you take a sort of reasonable assumption about retirement ages, about half of them will retire in the next 10 years, which means that in terms of, career trajectory, I mean, even an arts graduate can go from secretary to CEO. So come on, you know, there's plenty of opportunity for growing a big career there. But then my second point would be not so much about how many opportunities there are, but also about how very diverse they are. And I think that's only going to, you know, become more extreme. So in a world of big data, the way that we do demand and supply planning and the way that we cope with, you know, diagnostics and machine learning and AI, all of those things have a part to play in making warehouses increasingly efficient. And really, those are some quite technical skills that people might not imagine would be so important in our sector. But at the same time, you know, I talked about managers and directors and the retirement profile. We have huge numbers of people, and all of those people need leadership. So whether it's supervisors, warehouse managers, you know, when I was 25, I had about 30 people reporting to me, and not many of my peer group had that. And I would say nowadays there's probably even more scope for that sort of, you know, for growing into leadership. And then, of course, don't forget, the UK government has incredible ambitions for how many robots we're going to have in warehouses. I think they've probably overcooked it a bit, but the direction of change is definitely correct. I think at the moment, DHL have done some research that indicates that roughly 20% of all warehouses have got some form of automation in them, and that's only going to increase. And of course, that requires all the robots have to be built, they have to be designed, they have to be programmed, they have to be maintained. I mean, you know, the sky's the limit. There's a whole load of job opportunities there. And of course, I don't want to overlook the fact that there's a big proportion of people working in warehousing doing entry level pick and pack type jobs. And those jobs can be, you know, that's what makes us really, really important for social mobility. Because let's say that you haven't done so well at school and you haven't got a lot of qualifications. In order to be successful as a picker and packer, I think you've got to be able to count, but I don't think you've actually got to have a lot more, you know, a wide range of skills than that to get in at the entry level. But once you do, if you want to make progress, there are opportunities to do that as well. So what I'm really saying is there's something for everyone.
I'd certainly agree with that. And then I think people sometimes get lost in the fact, oh, well, it's, you know, it's just about, you know, picking or driving a forklift truck. You know, you're right. You picked up all of the leadership. You picked up all the technology. But let's not forget things like human resources professionals. Let's not forget about sales and marketing. Let's not forget about finance. Let's not forget about quality. You know, there are all sorts of career opportunities within the warehousing sector, really, you know, and beyond. And I think even relationship management specialists, I mean, I think that's a key. It's a key area of interest for my business at the moment, because I think we don't manage our relationships in a good way between supply partners and customers. So that's been bothering me. I've disabused myself from all of my passion about e-sourcing, and I want to talk to people now. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to someone just starting out? You know, how would somebody that's interested in a career in logistics or warehousing, how would they find out more?
So at the very beginning, I would say for those who are at school or college, you need to Google two words, think logistics. And there's a Think Logistics website with some resources there. There are people who will come out to schools and colleges and do some sort of outreach work from our industry to work with young people. So I would definitely start with Think Logistics. For those who are already actually working in our profession, but perhaps in the early days of their career, definitely join the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport. I joined in 1999, I think, I've really found it a valuable way to build the network. So I've met lots of interesting people, things that I've struggled with and I don't know where to turn. There's always someone at the CILT for whom you can turn for advice, but also some great role models of, you know, I've looked at how other people's careers have progressed and thought, well, if they can do it, maybe I could too. And that sort of exposure I've found to be really helpful. So, yeah, definitely start with Think Logistics, and that will inspire you to join our profession. And then once you have, join the CILT. That would be my advice.
Brilliant advice. I'd certainly agree and support that. Claire, this has been a fascinating interview. Thank you very much for sharing. I know your time is really precious, and I really enjoyed the conversation. We always find out more by having a simple chat and asking questions, don't we?
Absolutely.
Claire, thanks so much. Actually, in our next episode, we're going to be talking to somebody that became a CEO of a major aviation and air cargo business and left school with just 4 O-levels. And so it's a similar story. So that's the next one that's coming along. So if you're enjoying what you're hearing on Logistics Collective, the podcast, please like and follow us. And if you do like and follow us, we will give you a reminder when the next one is out. And we've got about 4 or 5 queuing up for me to talk to. So we aim to make this quite busy and interactive. So Claire's been patiently listening to me close out. Thanks ever so much, Claire. And we'll end the program now. And all the best to you.
Thank you.
You can get in contact by email, podcast@logisticscollective.com, or leave a voice message on our website, logisticscollective.com. The podcast is a production by LeGuru.